A sad story of love, celebrity, and apparent dishonesty ends in a divorce for the celebrity couple Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, who've been through a well-publicized cancer scare, the total loss of privacy as parents raising six kids. The romantic details of Pitt and Jolie's breakup are hidden by publicists and the curtains of superstardom. But for wife and mom Glennon Doyle Melton, it's the sharing of all her bad choices and romantic troubles that has been both therapeutic and made her new book, Love Warrior, a number one bestseller.
I had just stopped drinking after 15 years of addiction. He clearly had all of this secret stuff going on forever. We were a mess, right?
Love Warrior tells of struggles with alcohol addiction, battles with bulimia, and her husband Craig's consumption of porn and affairs with women throughout their marriage. Melton has used her very turbulent personal life to launch herself into a newfound celebrity. Melton finds herself the confessional touchstone for millions of people struggling to save their marriages.
I started writing about my personal life and like the real raw stuff about recovering from addiction. And it helped me so much. You know, like they say, you're only as sick as your secrets, and kind of living all of the messy stuff out loud helped me stay sober and get strong. And so I kind of, when all this marriage stuff happened, I thought maybe the same thing is true of relationships. Like maybe if we talked more about the hard stuff and the messy stuff, it would help heal our marriages. And I think that's kind of what's happened. Like just getting it all out there has made people feel free to talk about the struggles that they have. Because marriage is hard for everybody. There is no shiny, perfect marriage, really. I mean, relationships are tough. So, yeah, I mean, I hope it has started a conversation about how real people can love each other well.
We talk a lot about forgiveness and trust and pain and, you know, the attempt to overcome the pain that one person has caused another in a relationship. So many people end up believing that these are, you know, borders you can't cross again. So in other words, I don't trust you anymore, and I'm never going to. I don't want you to touch me anymore, and I'm never going to. How did you deal with that impulse to basically build the wall?
I mean, I didn't. I kept the wall up for a long time. I mean, I was furious when Craig told me he'd been unfaithful my whole marriage. You know, it wasn't just an isolated event. It was like a series of one-night stands. And I'm a person who's always struggled with intimacy. I have major body issues that I've had since I was 10. I became bulimic when I was 10 years old. And so I've always struggled with body stuff and intimacy stuff. So it felt like a double whammy, you know, like I'd finally tried to trust and then I got slammed. And that betrayal was kind of like a double pain for me. But look, I mean, I don't know. I'm at a point now where I don't think it's an and or situation. Like, I think that, you know, the end of Love Warrior ends with Craig and I together. And as of right
not
now,
just together,
we're
not just together. It's like naked and in the sack. I'm telling you, it's a happy ending.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a happy ending. And the interesting thing now, I don't know if you know, John, but we actually have separated now. So the story continues. And that part's been interesting, announcing a separation right before your book about marriage redemption comes out. That's been a fun situation. But look, this is what I think now. I mean, what I think now is that you can forgive someone. And when I say forgiveness, I just mean like I understand now that Craig is just human like I am, right? Like I am someone who used booze and drugs and all kinds of things to kind of get outside of my pain, right? To numb it, to run
right,
from it.
Right.
Craig used sex. Craig used other people's bodies. Like, I understand that we are just both humans dealing crappily with our pain, right? So I see the similarities between us. Because of that, I forgive him completely for being human, and I still love him. But what I've learned is that you can love someone and forgive them and still not want to be married to them forever.
The practicalities of being together with someone who you're constantly having to deal with this issue over and over, you can reach a point where it's just not going to work. And it sounds like that's where you are right now.
Yeah. And I think that the only way for us to maintain probably like a loving, kind relationship our whole life is to not try to be married anymore.
Right.
Just because that resentment builds and everybody deserves a fresh start. He deserves a fresh start to try again now that he's a better, wholer human being. But look, I mean, this whole marriage thing, God, it can be a mess because, I mean, I think what Love Warrior is a lot about is that like I as a child, so, you know, we're all Trinities, we're body, mind, and spirit, right? and like the healthiest of us live out lives of the body and lives of the mind and lives of the spirit. But little girls, we get so many confusing messages from such a young age about our bodies. We get so shamed for our bodies that we just kind of stop associating with our bodies. Like we like vote the bodies off the island of us, right? Which makes intimacy later so confusing because we end up feeling used. Because we agree with the world that our bodies are just objects, right? So that's what I dealt with later. And then we've got these boys on the other side who are also trinities, but they've been told from such a young age, don't feel. Don't feel, right? Don't cry. So they vote their emotions off the island of themselves. And then later we marry each other. And for me, what happened was Craig was trying to love me with his body, but I didn't live there. So I couldn't feel it. And I was trying to love him with my emotions, but he didn't live there. So he couldn't feel it. So we just were constantly missing each other.
Describe to me when you first understood that your very personal details and your ability to write them down and put them on a blog were connecting with people in a way that you never thought possible. And we're talking really big numbers here.
Well, basically, I figured out that people need to tell the truth at recovery meetings, right? So I started going to recovery meetings and looking around the circles at these recovery meetings and thinking, oh, my God, these are the first honest people I've ever met in my life. And this is a really good way to do life, to be this honest, to be this brave with your stories and this kind with other people's stories. And then I thought, well, why the heck can't we just live our whole lives like that, right? Like, why do you have to find a basement in a church to be honest? Why can't we just talk like this everywhere? So I started a blog called Momastery, where I was honest as people are in recovery meetings. And I talked about, you know, funny stuff, but I also talked about how hard recovery is and faith is and marriage is and parenting is, and was just raw and honest and human. And millions of people decided that that's what they needed in their lives. So people started flocking to the blog. I never promoted it anywhere. It was just all organic. And now millions of people are there every day. I think we have a million readers a day now.
Somebody tweaked your website, and boy, the numbers really went crazy. What was that like?
It was wild. I didn't even understand what was going on, honestly. Everything started to go viral when they put the share buttons on. And, a couple of weeks later, I was in New York City at a 10-house auction for my first book.
Whoa.
It was a wild, wild ride. It has been ever since then.
So are you the kind of person that, you know, if I sit down and have lunch with you, you're going to go, oh, gosh, I can remember when I was a teenager vomiting up food just like this. You know, I mean, are you so honest that it might be a little bit like, ouch, I would want to run away?
Not at all. Not at all. I'm quiet. I'm a raging introvert. I have like 3 friends. I don't go to cocktail parties. I don't even like, I'm a person who really deeply loves humanity, but humans are hard for me, you know? So the reason I write is so that I can be completely honest somewhere, right? I mean, the first time I wrote words down on a piece of paper, I felt like I was looking more into a mirror than I ever have looking into an actual mirror. And my family, you know, my family is, we're people who communicate intimately through words on paper. Like we've always been able to have conversations in letters back and forth that we could never have in person. So I learned at a young age that the written word is a place where you can reveal things about yourself that you would never feel comfortable saying across a table. So that's why I write.
There's an interesting technological story here in that the computer is a mechanism for people to explore pornography, as your husband Craig did, and also apparently link up with other women, as your husband Craig apparently did. But it's also the window through which you're able to get all these honest feelings out. Can you comment on whether this would even have been possible in another era?
God, no. I mean, I think it's interesting, right? It's like Craig was looking for physical intimacy online, and I was finding emotional intimacy online. We were both doing it outside of our marriage, right? It's just like an interesting parallel.
That is interesting. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I mean, it's sort of the, men are from Mars, women are from Venus kind of idea that you're seeking the emotional piece online, and he's seeking something very physical.
Right. And it goes back to we were missing each other, right? Like I was reaching out to him for a while to connect with me emotionally. It wasn't happening. So I turned to strangers. And it's interesting to think that he did the same thing on the other side. No, I mean, I think there's amazing things that come of this whole way of living on the internet. I mean, my blog, Momastery, has turned into Together Rising, which is a nonprofit that has raised $4 million online for women and children all over the world just through this blog community. So there are certainly amazing things that can happen when it's done well and right. But you certainly do have to be careful.
What are your rules about technology in your own home for your kids? I mean, everyone gets a cell phone or nobody does?
No. Ironically, I'm like really, really careful with technology with my kids. I mean, my son has a phone. He's in eighth grade, so he has a phone. He's the only one that has one. And my girls are in elementary school and they have iPads, but they do not have the internet. So Chase has the internet, the older one, but the girls don't.
Do you think that your story is an example of or a lesson of you really should fight for your marriage if possible and that people give up too soon or that, I don't know, maybe, you know, you don't waste your life in something that eventually isn't going to work out? What's the verdict on marriage from your experience?
I don't know. Look, I have no idea. I would never in a million years guess like what the lesson is or tell people what to do with their marriages. I mean, I will tell you that I come from a faith community and there's a lot of confusing messages there about marriage. I mean, people told me crazy stuff about what would happen to me if I didn't stay or,
like
you know,
what?
Everybody
like
has
what?
Their
like
opinion.
What? What crazy
oh, God.
Stuff?
I mean, some woman came up to me in church and said, right at the height of it, and said, Glennon, you know that God hates divorce and you were put here to be Craig's helper. And I didn't go to church for like months and months. And yeah, it's just such, I mean, my God, the messages that women get in church about what, like there are churches who really try to convince women that leaving a man and leaving God are the same thing.
The irony here is that those are crazy remarks, but the virtues of struggling and the way that it brings you to a deeper place is worthwhile. That's worth doing.
That's what we did. But here's the deal. Like what I look back and think of like what that did for me and what that did for Craig is that we had that horrible situation and we both stayed in our pain and fought, right? We didn't run. We didn't run from each other. We worked our butts off for 4 years. But what happened is that he went into his own healing place and I went into my own healing place. So we both, I mean, he went into intensive therapy. I went into intensive therapy. Like, we both understood that this horrible situation was an opportunity for each of us to become stronger, wholer human beings. And we did. I mean, Craig is a completely different human being today than he was 4 years ago when all of this went down. And so am I, which is why I was able to be strong enough to walk away a couple months ago. So I don't know if the lesson is to fight for your marriage, but I know that whatever crappy thing happens to us is an opportunity to fight to become wholer and mm-hmm. stronger mm-hmm. and braver and better. And that is to me is the whole warrior thing. Like I didn't say, oh my God, I'm going to save my marriage. I never said that. I just knew from being an addict and from all the other things I've recovered from that whatever happens to us in our life is an invitation just to get better and to get stronger. And Craig would tell you without a doubt that all of this did that for him. So somebody said, like, how does it feel that your marriage failed after all of that? And I just started laughing because I don't even relate to that at all. Like, mm-hmm. I can't even, John, I can't even put my head around considering the fact that my marriage was a failure. I cannot imagine anything being more successful than my marriage was, because when Craig and I met, we were both broken people. I had just stopped drinking after 15 years of addiction. He clearly had all of this secret stuff going on forever. We were a mess, right? And we came together, and for 14 years, we're just, it was hard as hell, but we were healing partners for each other. Mm-hmm. Right. We brought to each other for whatever reason, like, you know, the universe brings you the people that you need to rub against to heal. Like, I needed his crap for whatever reason. And he needed my crap in order to face what we needed to heal in ourselves. And now we leave each other whole people. I mean, we love each other. He lives 7 houses down from me now. We are able to get along better than we did when we were together. We're better. So I feel like my marriage was a raging success.
So are you like totally radioactive to date, or would you say most fun you could ever have in Naples, Florida?
Am I radioactive to date?
What are you in? Really, are you great? Are you like, you have intimacy problems? You do. I mean, in other words, are you concerned about, you know, taking a step into a new life, or is it seem
Sean,
completely
do you
natural?
Know the truth about that?
Yes.
I'm so excited.
All right.
I'm excited, and I feel like I learned enough to begin again. And so's Craig. No, I'm super excited. I feel like every time you burn your life down, the next life is better.
If I met Craig, would I think he's just kind of a creepy loser, or would I like him? Would he be fun?
No, you'd absolutely love him. He's a doll. He's the best dad on earth. He's funny. He's kind. You'd absolutely love him. He's a great guy. And to me, he's the hero. He's one of the heroes of Love Warrior. He's my favorite kind of hero because he jacked everything up, but he stayed and fought to become better and stronger. And I think he did a good job. I'm proud of him.
What's the next step for you? I mean, besides, you know, my asking about dating and stuff. I mean, where do you go from here with all of this?
I guess I just start a new life, which I'm used to doing. I take everything that I've learned and I just do the next right thing, which is that's how I got sober. That's how I run my professional life. That's what I do as a parent. So I just figure out what the next right thing is and I do that one thing at a time.
How do you, in recovery, resist the urge now that I'm assuming you're probably financially much more secure and say your kids are grown and left home and you're a, you know, famous author. Hey, perfect time to jump off the wagon, right?
Yeah, right. Now when everyone's watching? No, I don't think it's a good time. I mean, look, I did that for so long and I sucked as a human being. Like, I was a mess and I just like myself a lot better now. I still think about drinking probably every day. Every single day I think about how nice it would be to have a drink. And then I just don't do it. That's how you stay sober, right?
Right.
I just don't do it.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, there are people constantly coming into the studio being interviewed for one thing or another. And one person who was part of the entourage of the last group of people I interviewed looked at your book and said, "Oh, I'm reading that. Oh, my gosh. It's so amazing." So, you know, you're all over the place.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just hope that this book, I mean, there's been prices to pay for me for sure about being this honest. I just hope it starts conversations that people are scared to have. I hope it starts conversations about sex and about porn and about betrayal and about mental health and about the messages that our little girls get and about how freaking everything we learn about masculinity and femininity makes it just near impossible for actual men and women to love each other. And I think that's what's happening. So I'm excited. I just want to start all the conversations and then go home and be safe.
That's great. One of the scenes in your book is, man, how you can really find some wrong couples therapists. You really had a pretty bad experience with one couples therapist who seemed to me to be a guy who wanted to defend men and porn and getting you to basically say, come on, it's not so bad.
Well, I mean, this is a conversation that is important to have. I mean, there are a lot of people who think porn is not so bad. And I've had conversations with people who I respect, and I respected their opinion by the end of the conversation. And you know, I've had a lot of people say to me, I mean, I think of myself as a serious, like, rabid feminist, right? And so me saying I hate porn is a problem for some feminists. So what I think about that is that, you know, feminism isn't I hate porn or I love porn. It's every woman can decide whether she hates porn or loves porn. For me, I hate it. I hate everything about it. I think it desensitizes our boys and commodifies our girls. And I think it's what's causing a lot of people's intimacy problems right now. And I think it's a gateway to other things. And so I'm going to do everything I can do to kind of start conversations about that. But I've heard good opinions on the other side, too. So,
well, away from the porn subject, what advice would you give people who are looking for a couples therapist? How can you go wrong? And, you know, what do you need to look out for?
I mean, I just think that everyone needs to learn to trust their instincts, right? I mean, I sat with that therapist, and I knew in the first 10 minutes that he was off. And so when you know that, you just need to leave, because a good therapist can save your life and a bad therapist can ruin your life. So, and you know what? I don't think that I think if you have a therapist who's freshly in recovery, that maybe is not a good thing.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's what happened. Yeah. If I'm further along in my recovery than my therapist, I'm not staying there.
That's a good one.
Because we really do try to, you know, sometimes recovery can be like a pyramid scheme, right? We're like, we just got it and we're trying to like sell it to everybody under us so that we can stay afloat. And it becomes this thing where recovering people kind of try to collect other recovering people to keep themselves steady. And if you get that feeling from your therapist, that's not a good place to be.
What do you say to people who consider your level of honesty possibly something that your kids are going to have to live down as they grow up?
I mean, I'd say they're probably right. I mean, that's a challenge my kids will have. I mean, a challenge my kids won't ever have is learning how to be human on their own. They know it from me. I mean, I think a lot of parents try to hide their humanity from their kids and their mistakes. And I think that's selfish, because I think their kids might feel great about them as parents, but they're going to feel like crap about themselves when they figure out that they are human and they don't have any clue how to be human because their parents never showed them what it actually looks like on the inside. So I don't know. I mean, my kids don't think I'm perfect. That's for sure. I mean, they have Google. But
they have it from the first authority that you're not perfect.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing. Like, nobody could ever do an expose on me because I just do it myself all the time. So I'm not scared. And I'm not never scared of my kids finding out something about me because I've already told them the truth. We have a fiercely honest relationship. And I know how to, I mean, I was a teacher for the first half of my life, so I know how to talk to kids about this stuff without having it be scary. I don't know. I wouldn't do it any other way than honest.
Glennon Doyle Melton, it's a pleasure to talk to you, and she's the author of Love Warrior. Congratulations on all your success.
Thank you so much, John.